here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Zach's Friday Finish Line. I'm Ryan McQueenie, an associate stock strategist here at Zach's, joined by one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hello, today is Friday, November 16th, and we are here to recap this week's biggest stories in the investment and financial world. It was quite the busy week, both here in the U.S. and abroad. And as the snow started to fall in Chicago and out east, there was that huge nor'easter that like struck New York City.
It's officially winter.
And randomly St. Louis, it missed us. I mean, we did get a little snow on Thursday, but it just hit basically everywhere else.
Thank God for that.
I know. I was not ready for what happened out east so soon, and neither was anyone else. So hopefully it'll go away. It won't stick around because the ground is still so warm.
Yeah. Just wet and gross.
It just didn't look very pretty. But we had plenty of time, at least in Chicago, to stay warm and cozy here in the Zach's office and to cover basically all of the news that went on for you. So we'll get going quickly with a major breaking update and the ongoing Brexit saga, crisis, whatever you want to call it.
I'm going to do my best to get the facts right on what we know right now, but it could be different by the time we're done recording this podcast, by the time it gets edited and uploaded. It
could be British politics.
Could be a completely different situation by the time you're listening to this. But basically what happened this week was the proverbial S hit the fan, if you will. Yeah. And British Prime Minister Theresa May and her entire government was in turmoil after May announced that the UK and the EU had agreed on the text of a Brexit withdrawal agreement, if you will. And then 7 people resigned almost immediately.
Yeah. And including the top Brexit secretary.
Yeah, which is, I think they've been through about half a dozen of those guys now. But they keep funneling them through. The major breaking point that we have that we're looking forward to now is this March 29th, 2019 date. That's what we're trying to get a deal done before that, because that's when the UK's membership in the EU expires regardless of whether there's a deal or not.
Right.
And so if that happens, the expiration happens without a deal, then, potentially catastrophic is the word that I've heard. Things would just cease happening. Travel would be hypothetically
travel. It's immigration. It's labor. It's trade. It's literally
trade,
everything.
Like the food supply.
It's currency. Yeah. It's everything that British citizens are so used to having so seamlessly. It would just stop.
Yeah. So we're trying to get something done before that, and we thought we had something done this week. The issue is that the deal that was reached this week was more of a, I guess what they're calling a soft Brexit, and these hardline Brexiteers is what they're calling them now, said it would effectively leave Britain under the rules and the regulations of the EU. So it wasn't a hard enough Brexit. These people want a hard Brexit. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really why you saw the resignations. I think more so in British politics, this resign and protest thing is much more prevalent. So these were a bunch of resign and protests. And then kind of what crept into the conversation as this was happening was this vote of no confidence that the Conservatives can levy against British Prime Minister Theresa May, who is a member of the Conservative Party. And typically when that happens, there's a resignation from the Prime Minister. A lot of times there might even be a resignation just because that's being speculated that there's going to be this vote of no confidence. May, nonetheless, on Thursday, insisted that despite these challenges, she plans on seeing this deal through. I guess it's seems like it's back to the drawing board.
Well, they still have to vote on her deal.
Right.
And many people.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, but no one really thinks it's going to pass.
No, it's probably not going to pass.
No. So then they have to go back to the drawing board before March 29th, which is in like 130 something odd days.
And there's a bunch of holidays in between.
Yeah.
You know, these, the government's not going to necessarily be, you know, around to be cranking this stuff out over the holidays. So it's a whole mess and a half.
Yeah.
And
I mean, our government is a mess.
Yeah.
Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, all governments have their ups and downs, but like reading this yesterday, I was like, oh my God.
It's no fun over there right now.
No.
And I think, you know, you're starting to hear a bunch of the, you know, part of the storyline that, as I mentioned, was this vote of no confidence in May. Is she going to resign? Another storyline that kind of crept back up is let us have another referendum. Like, this is clearly not working. Let the public speak again.
If she ends up resigning, it will end up having to go down that route, I think.
And part of the reason it's also so complicated is you have conservative party members who want a hard Brexit. You've got Labour Party members who also want a hard Brexit. They want it probably for different reasons.
Yes.
Then you have conservatives and Labour Party members who don't want a Brexit at all. May has always really, in my opinion, seemed like she never really wanted to be a part of this to begin with, and has kind of reluctantly had to lead the charge here. And
think about 2 years ago when they first had the vote and no one thought it would happen.
Yeah.
And then it did. And then David Cameron, who was the prime minister, quit.
Yeah, yeah.
Resigned. Theresa May stepped in, had to invoke Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty on March 29th, 2017. And that's when it started. Then 2 years of negotiations have gone by in order to get this deal that no one wanted.
Yeah.
And it's still ongoing.
Here we are.
It's crazy. It's,
yeah.
But then another thing I was reading is that they still have like the whole Ireland thing.
Yeah.
That people are like,
sure,
are thinking about, like, that's like a whole other issue because Ireland is still in the EU, but Northern Ireland is still part of the UK.
Yeah.
I mean, that goes like way back, right? That's a whole other discussion
other
day. But they were, I mean, do they build a border between Ireland and the UK? I mean, it's just, there's so many little like bits and pieces to Brexit that once you open like the proverbial, I don't know, cupboard, like things just start flying out of you, I guess.
And I think, bringing this back home to kind of what it means for investors, it's another one of these things that just the kind of uncertainty of it all is weighing on people. There's obviously been a lot of different headwinds that European investors have faced over the last few months. And just the fact that this is kind of rearing its ugly head again as the year is trying to wrap up has introduced some volatility. And, you know, that European volatility gets crazy enough, and it definitely seeps across the ocean.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, just yesterday, here, so. Look at the pound. I would fall as much as 2% against the dollar, and then you have those banks, the big British banks, like Royal Bank of Scotland, was down like 10% at one point. And it's just like, I mean, it was bad when they first, with the first ref, like
right.
2 years ago.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's kind of counterintuitive because it's like, well, investors didn't love it over there when it first happened, when they voted on it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got 2 years to adjust and figure out and set your expectations and plan for what's next. And then all of a sudden now it looks like, okay, are we further away from a deal than we've ever been?
Yeah. Any bump in the road, it's gonna just not be great that for any, I guess, equity that has a exposure.
Yeah, definitely. So also just, I want to say one more time, Brexiteers is a great word.
It is. It harkens back to the olden days,
yeah,
you know?
It's beautiful. They do such a fantastic job in the UK of giving things names and labels and making them sound cool. Bringing it back stateside though, besides this kind of Brexit thing weighing on everyone's minds around the world, we also had kind of mixed earnings coming in from some of our big retailers this week that also kind of added to this volatility we've seen this week. So to start, let's recap. Let's talk Walmart first.
Oh, yeah. Walmart. Like all the retailers are gearing up for next week. Black Friday. But Walmart's earnings were pretty good. So adjusted earnings came in at $1.08 per share, which came ahead of the Zacks consensus estimate of $1.02. Further, earnings improved 8% from $1 in the year ago quarter. Total revenues advanced 1.4% to $124.9 billion. And this matched our Zacks consensus estimate. U.S. comps, which excludes fuel, improved 3.4%, while e-commerce sales surged 43%. And this is better than the 40% guidance recorded, or not guidance, growth recorded in the second quarter. Let me say that again, because I feel like I definitely fumbled that sentence. E-commerce sales surged 43%, and this is better than 40% growth recorded in the second quarter. There we go. So guidance. U.S. comps are now anticipated to grow at least 3%, again, excludes fuel, compared with roughly 3% growth expected earlier. Adjusted earnings are now expected to be $4.75 to $4.85, so in between that range. And this is compared to $4.65 to $4.80 previously. So lifted guidance.
What you need in this environment, beat and raise quarter for Walmart. So
yeah, definitely.
Pretty solid. You stressed it, that e-commerce sales up 43%. The growth rate picking up from the previous quarter is interesting to me.
Yeah, something you always want to see.
Yeah, definitely, because especially Walmart. With these companies like the big box retailers like Walmart, investing so heavily in the e-commerce stuff over the past couple years, that when that first starts to come in, you see those huge growth rates, and that's kind of expected when you're buying e-commerce websites and investing in your own platforms and offering new shipping deals and all that type of stuff. But the fact that growth rate can stick around and you keep seeing it, even picking up pace here this quarter means that, I think their initiatives on that end are good and sticking with shoppers, obviously hitting home with shoppers and people coming back to the websites and enjoying their experiences.
Right. So. I mean, a lot of this product now you can find on both Walmart.com and Jet.com, which was Walmart's first $3 billion e-commerce purchase. So, Walmart's, they're not going away anytime soon.
No, definitely not. And comps up 3.4%. That's a really good number to see anywhere in the retail sector. We had some other major retailers coming in, specifically in the department stores. So we're going to do a few of the major mall-based, strip mall-based,
the mall
shopping center-based.
The anchors.
Yes, and the iconic retail names. Starting with one that has struggled recently. Maybe that is actually maybe downplaying what has happened recently. But we're going to start with JCPenney. 52 cent loss per share, which actually better than our expectations by about 5 cents. Revenue came in at $2.7 billion. That missed estimates. And comps, get ready for this one, Maddie. Comps fell 5.4% in the quarter. To me, that's really rough considering the strength of the consumer spending environment right off the bat. I mean, that alone, comps down 5.4% in this type of economy, that's not good. That's not a good spot to see. Plus, you also think all three of these names, really, that we're going to mention, should be, to some extent, helped by the fact that in a lot of the shopping centers they're operating in, Sears stores have been closing, other stores have been closing, and the fact that they're unable to snag any of that hypothetically new business, especially with JCPenney, improving its selection of appliances and things like that, which would be a Sears type of, if anybody's still at Sears, which I guess that's kind of part of it, is no one really shops at Sears anymore. That's why they're closing so many stores and going bankrupt. But still, comps down 5.4%. That's really bad. Spoiler alert, the worst comps performance of the department store retailers that we're going to mention here. Couple other things that investors didn't love about the report was that Penny suspended its full-year profit forecast. They said this was because of the new CEO coming in, a few other new major executives coming in, just still getting their footing. I suppose the new CEO is from Joann's Fabrics, I believe.
Joann.
And it's only been a few weeks, really, since they took over. And so that makes sense. Lowered its sales expectations and said it now projects comparable sales to decline by single-digit percentages this year. But, and this was one of these, like, whipsaws in morning trading reports, because immediate decline in pre-market trading and at the open, because those are not great results, but surged into the green, actually gained about 15% on Thursday.
Okay.
Because investors like what they heard in the conference call. You know, it could have been a combination of a number of things. Maybe it's just the general sentiment and tone from the new management team. You know, we're talking about a stock that's trading around that $1 per share range, so it's probably going to see these crazy swings more than some others. But apparently something was said on the conference call that resonated with people, and it surged into the green.
I don't call it. I mean, I am not surprised by this. By these results.
No. Well, yeah. It's been a struggle. And we talk about this every time we bring up
the
retailers. JCPenney has struggled.
I don't know anyone who would rather go to a you can just go to a Macy's at this point.
And apparently so, because as we'll get into here in a second, Macy's quarter was much better.
JCPenney just, like, for me, has just lingered in 2005.
Yeah.
And refuse to do anything about that. Sure, they've added Sephora, and the only time I've gone to a JCPenney is to go to their Sephora mini shops.
Sure, the store within a store, if you will.
The store within a store.
What's interesting, though, and we're going to go through Macy's and Nordstrom, is that JCPenney up after its report, but Macy's and Nordstrom, who in my view had a much better quarter, down significantly after their reports. And I think it's just...
Yes, because once you reach a certain peak...
Yeah, it's a matter of expectations.
Investors expect
at this
you
point.
To do, like, the best ever, to be, like, prom queen.
You know, I think the expectations were very low for JCPenney going into this. And so it was about that management sentiment. Do we like the new CEO? Does the new team kind of sound like they've got a plan for the next couple years? Apparently so in the conference call, you know, and then the expectations are a little bit higher for Macy's and Nordstrom. And I think maybe just a little bit.
Like, totally unfair, in my opinion.
A little bit of hesitancy.
Okay, Macy's. This is what's so frustrating about retail right now, is that this type of outlook is, I don't feel like it's, like, the same as in any other sector. But Macy's posted adjusted earnings of 27 cents a share. And this comfortably beat the Zacks consensus estimate of 14 cents and rose from 20 cents reported in the year ago period. Revenue of $5.4 billion. This edged out our consensus estimate, increasing 2.3% year over year. Comps gained 3.3%. Marking the fourth straight quarter of comps growth for the company.
This is
incredible.
Good thing.
Like, finally, Macy's is, like, I feel like they're doing something right. They're trying new tech initiatives. Facebook of all companies is doing
pop-up
shops in Macy's. Yeah, yeah. Like, who knew? Who would have even have thought of that, like, 2 years ago? But management is trying just new things, or I feel like they're just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. And a lot of this is, like, new tech initiatives that are actually, like, connecting with the customers. Mm-hmm. But Macy's now expects full year sales to increase in the range of, and this is a net sale, so 0.3% to 0.7%, compared with the prior guidance of that, a flat up to 0.7%. So earnings are expected in the range of $4.10 to $4.30 per share for fiscal 2018, and this is up from the prior view of $3.95 to $4.15 a share. But Macy's shares lost about 15% on the week. It's just, you know, like we said, a matter of expectations. Once you start hitting a certain threshold, specifically in retail, especially after the last 3 years of just underperforming, I feel like you have to keep reaching a certain, you have to be better and better and better and better and better.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do in an industry where it's all about trends, where it's so cyclical, where if you get a certain color wrong,
right,
you could literally throw money into a fire.
Sure.
And you just start losing money.
Sure. So before I make this next point, I just want to do full disclosure for the listeners. We own Macy's and the Zacks Income Investor Portfolio Service that I edit. But I totally agree with you on that. I did, but I didn't hear that from Macy's. I didn't hear like we got something wrong on trend and it's going to take us a quarter to figure that out. And what I see is a beat and raise quarter, a hefty beat, and a pretty solid adjustment to the earnings guidance, bringing that bottom end of the full year sales guidance up a little bit. Maybe, you know, just speculating here, maybe it wasn't enough of a revenue raise for people. As you mentioned, you know, the expectations are different here. But that's the basics that I'm going to look for in this market environment is a beat and raise quarter. So we have that. We're going into, as we've discussed on the show at length now, what should be a historic holiday shopping period, which I believe, as you pointed out, Macy's is uniquely positioned to benefit from because of their investments in the shopping experience mm-hmm. and the new technologies. I think that the sell-off after earnings is a little bit overblown. I think we'll see some renewed interest in these kind of beaten down. I mean, we're talking about a stock now that's trading at 8x its expected fiscal 2018 earnings. So it looks cheap to me. It continues to look cheap. It looked cheap when we bought it in the Income Investor Service. The valuation has only gone down since then.
Sure.
So I think that you know, it still looks cheap, and it wouldn't surprise me if over the next month or so, as people see these trends playing out in real time, that these cheap retail stocks get some new interest as we head closer to the holidays. Because, you know, as we know, we're looking forward always as investors, so we know this holiday period is going to be strong. And we've known that for some time now. So at some level, all that's priced in. But there's still this weird, dumb human being thing that happens where all of a sudden everybody's talking retail stocks as we head into the holiday shopping period. And it typically is a pretty good time to own retailers. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm impressed by Macy's. I'm impressed by the next company we're going to talk about as well. But another stock that sold off after earnings yeah. report, and that's Nordstrom. Adjusted earnings per share of 67 cents in their fiscal Q3. That beat the Zacks consensus by 64 cents. Was flat year over year. There was a weird new revenue recognition standard that I'm going to cite a couple different times here. It had to do with the timing of the anniversary sale and the way that they're going to...
the best... Just retail spectacular. Sale
spectacular.
Ever. It's every summer. I personally shop it every summer. It's like late July, early August. If you have never heard of it, you guys need to definitely jump on the bandwagon. It's so you shop pre-fall items yeah. in the summer. So you can, you know, boots, sweaters for men, women, children, like literally everything. Beauty, skincare for like up to like 30-40% off.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Which, by the way, listeners, this is what you should be doing. You shop the season before the season starts. So
and you get
the
like
best deals.
Absurd prices, like absurd sales. And I know some women that go in and shop like once a year at Nordstrom.
And it's just the anniversary sale.
And it's just the anniversary yeah. sale. And they use their Nordstrom card. They get hella notes, and they just go ham.
All of this is to say that it had some sort of weird effect on their revenue recognition and their revenue reporting. I didn't quite understand why the timing of the anniversary sale made the standard move, but
sure.
I'm going to cite that a couple times as things that happened for their results. Now, total revenues advanced 3.3% to about $3.75 billion, and that edged out the Zacks consensus of $3.68 billion. That's actually a comfortable beat there. Retail sales were up 3%, and credit card net revenues grew 13.6%. And then total comps were up 2.3% in the quarter. So just to review, that's 2.3% comps growth for Nordstrom. What was it? 3.3% for Macy's and down 5.4% for JCPenney. So, those are the results for the department store giants this quarter. Now, I'm going to touch on, as I said, I was impressed by Nordstrom's results. I'm going to touch on one thing that seems to be the major talking point as to why this stock is selling off in the wake of its report. They took a charge, a $72 million charge in credit card refunds to customers who were incorrectly charged higher interest rates in the quarter. So that's a one-off thing. But when you're looking at so much revenue growth from the credit card division, you also want that to be contributing to earnings growth and margin improvement. And, you know, taking those one-off charges for what seems like mistakes that you made are never a good look. So that was the major downside. Gross profit margin contracted about 137 basis points to 33.3% in the quarter. We can likely blame that charge and potentially that new revenue recognition standard for that. That being said, guidance was pretty strong again in this one. Revenue projected to be 15.5 to 15.6 billion, and that would be up from the 15.4 to 15.5 billion in the previous guidance. Comps are now expected to grow roughly 2%, and that's up from an earlier forecast of 1.5% to 1.2%. In terms of full year earnings, now expected to be $3.55 to $3.65 per share, up from $3.50 to $3.65 in the previous guidance. So kind of similar to Macy's there, where they're just kind of lifting the bottom ends of their guidance ranges, which to me is still a good guidance. Sure. Is still good guidance. That is basically in line though with the Zacks consensus estimate, which was at $3.59 heading into the report. So still like that's right bang in the middle of their guidance range there. So again, you know, same thing I could say for Macy's. It's I'm looking at it, I'm seeing a beat and raise quarter. I'm seeing well positioned for a number of reasons to benefit from what should be a really solid holiday quarter. You know, obviously you have a lot of question marks on how long this consumer spending environment is going to last. But right now, it looks pretty healthy. And the companies like Macy's and Nordstrom that are able to benefit from the strength right now and capitalize on the strength in this moment are going to be much better positioned to survive the next recession, even if it's just a recession that in terms of growth over in the retail sector. I don't know. Those are my thoughts on it. I don't know if you have any more thoughts on Nordstrom.
Nordstrom too has its discount arms, right? Has Nordstrom Rack and it has Home Look, which are always really strong performers. And like you said, if they can perform well, if it's full price division can perform this well.
Yeah.
In this strong of an economy, then it can maybe be a little bit of a pillow if things start to turn and they have to rely more heavily on their discount divisions, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. Because those stores definitely, because those types of stores are always popular, right? We always love a good TJ Maxx, a good Home Goods. That's the same store.
Yeah.
Same company.
Yeah.
But, or Ross stores, a Burlington.
Sure.
Those definitely become bigger retailers in times of downturn.
Yeah,
right?
Down periods. Sure. Yeah, definitely.
But in general, I'm a consumer who loves a good bargain.
Of course.
Right? We all do.
Always.
Always, right?
Yeah.
So a company like Nordstrom can use a Nordstrom Rack to their advantage.
Sure.
And they're not the only type of higher priced department store that has a discount arm. Saks has Saks
right.
Off Fifth.
Yeah.
For instance. So they all can, you know, finagle
but
their way to it's a strategy.
Sure, yeah. And that's a unique that's a unique benefit that they have that not everybody has, because they're getting exposure to both sides of it. So, you know, if the trend is more towards the upscale stuff, if that's performing well in a particular stretch of time, Nordstrom's going to benefit from that. But when we talk about, you know, discount retailers having a great time, which has been a story for the past year or so at least, Nordstrom Rack is right up there with the best of them. So,
yeah, absolutely.
All right. So that's kind of our thoughts on retail. That was, we had a lot of feelings, a lot of things we just got out in the air about retail.
But I think it's also because, like, I've been in the shopping mood too. I don't know. Have you?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just Amazoned hard yesterday because, as I told you, I'm redoing my whole room. So I'm like getting my interior decorate on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm like already very much trying to buy people Christmas presents and I'm excited.
Yeah.
All right. So that's retail. And as I said before we got into it, kind of mixed results to some extent, but really mixed reactions to the results.
Yeah.
And it was tough for this sector to get its footing this week. We got Target coming up next week. Few
that's
other,
a big one.
Seems like we got like one more wave of their big retail.
Yeah, I mean,
reports,
then you have
then
all the
we'll be done.
More mall companies,
right?
Too, like Urban Outfitters is a big one. Mm-hmm. I don't think they reported yet.
So we'll have those, and we'll cover the ones that peek out at us and wave and say hi. We have one more report that I want to get into today, though. Small, it's a little tech company. You may have heard of it. they're called NVIDIA. Shares plummeting and, what's worse, dragging other tech stocks down with it.
So
today,
they don't have any influence whatsoever.
After a bleak earnings report Thursday afternoon, it was bleak results and bleak guidance for NVIDIA, and people are worried about it.
Yeah, kind of don't know what to do because they've been such a, I mean, from whenever, I guess from the time I had like started like watching the company's earnings, they've been blowout.
Yeah.
At quarter
years
after quarter.
And years,
years
of this, yeah.
Okay, so adjusted earnings per share came in at $1.84, and this surged 38% from the year ago period. However, it missed the Zacks consensus estimate of $1.91. Revenues did improve 21% year over year to $3.2 billion. However, it also missed the Zacks consensus mark and management's own guidance. So a double miss.
That's
like unheard of.
That's not good.
It's unheard of for NVIDIA. The quarter was also marred by sluggishness in their gaming segment. So it's a pretty important segment for NVIDIA. Revenues fell short of expectations due to excess channel inventory, specifically in the Pascal GPU line. Also my new fragrance. management did note, however, that this is a short-term issue and should be corrected in 1 to 2 quarters.
I do want to jump in here real quick on that because when we talk about excess channel inventory, that to me sounds much more like a traditional chip company is going to run into.
Sure.
That's what we're talking about with all the chips, all the chip makers.
Yeah, that's been
all
a huge
year
story
long
for a
we've
long
been
time.
Talking about this is this oversupply, demand is going to shrink a little bit. The pricing is going to go haywire, and we're going to have inventory issues, and that's what causes the pullback. And that is the cyclical nature of the semiconductor companies. It happens a lot. It's happened many times. I've shared my thoughts on why I think secular growth trends may be able to outweigh that. And I think there's still a chance that the trough, as they say, is a little bit higher than it has been in the past when these pullbacks happen. But in this run-up that you just described for us, everybody has treated NVIDIA like it is not a traditional semiconductor company, myself included. It's all about these secular growth trends, all about the AI and the machine learning and the gaming and all this fun stuff. There's no way that it's going to be just like any other chip maker. That's why it's trading at some points multiple hundred times earnings. That obviously has come down as the estimates have gone up, and the stock has pulled back in recent months. But it was definitely always valued higher than the other chip stocks because it's not going to run into these same cyclical problems. But then I see excess channel inventory and I say, that sounds awfully familiar and awfully like the issues that the other semiconductor makers run into. So I thought that that was a problem as well, but some other issues as well in the report that people didn't like.
Yeah. Data center revenues. Mm-hmm. So this metric or this segment of NVIDIA's, so it increased 58% year over year, and it reached a record $792 million in the quarter. But that was below street estimates.
This has been the fastest growing segment for them over the last, I don't know, however many quarters. So
it just didn't cut it for investors.
Yeah, it wasn't enough.
For analysts. So, but on top of all of this, guidance was also weak. So Q4 revenue is now expected to be between 2.65 and 2.75 billion. Our Zacks consensus was sitting at 3.4 billion before this announcement. So
that's really not good.
No, it was quite far below. The stock opened about 19% lower on Friday, and the tech heavy Nasdaq led losses among major indexes. So it's like, you know, we've seen the story with Apple, you know, dipping lower after earnings, bringing the Dow down, bringing tech stocks down, and, you know, NVIDIA is doing the same.
Yeah, we look at a handful of companies as these bellwethers for the entire sector, and NVIDIA has become one of those in recent years. I'm going to speculate real quick on something if we want to find a bright spot here. I'm going to speculate that really muted Q4 guidance is because management just looked and saw that they missed on most expectations for this quarter, and now they want to kind of rein in those expectations. So the way to do that would be post some muted guidance and then outperform your own published expectations. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom. As I said, a lot of the stuff, the secular growth trends we've been talking about for years and years and years, will continue to be secular growth trends for NVIDIA. They're still, you know, a one-of-a-kind company with really, really high-end innovative technology that will continue to be high-end and innovative for years to come. It just seems like for years, nobody could catch up in terms of their expectations. They were just blowing things out of the park every quarter because we had no idea. And now we've caught up and maybe gotten ahead of ourselves a little bit with NVIDIA. And, you know, I think it speaks to a lot of the volatility we've seen in tech over the last several months.
Yeah.
So that's NVIDIA.
I agree on all your insights.
My boy Jensen Huang having a rough day and pour one out for the homie tonight. Not that he's dead, but. all right. That's going to do it for us this week. A lot of retail, a lot of Brexit, a lot of earnings, a lot of NVIDIA.
Now I just want some stuffing.
Yeah.
Some mashed potatoes.
It's almost Thanksgiving. We will have an episode next week for you guys on Friday if you are trying to abandon your family members and listen to podcasts if you're sick of your family.
Get a little potty hour.
We're going to do a little Black Friday special next week. Maybe throw it on in the aux and the car on your way to Black Friday shopping. That's how it could play out. But we'll see you guys then. Thank you for tuning in. Reminder, if you want us to cover a different story or if we missed anything or just want to say happy Thanksgiving, feel free to shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com. You can also check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. Please always remember to leave a rating and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. It definitely really helps us out. We're also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, basically anywhere you can get your podcasts these days. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next week on the Zacks Friday Finish Line.